That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hey, what's up, Surf Splendor listeners? This is your host, David Scales, once again, welcoming you back to the show. There's just a couple small business details I've got to get to before we launch into the show. If you're new, welcome. Follow the show on social media at Surf Splendor. Our website is surfsplendorpodcast.com. So everything that we discuss in this show is available there. All the videos, photos, links to articles, all that stuff is available there. We also have a full archive of every past episode of the show for free, and a music archive. All the music used in every episode of Surf Splendor is available on the website, listed by episode, obviously. So engage in conversation there and on social media. There's a comment section on the website, so you can chime in if you have thoughts about today's show or any other show. All right, check that out. Tell your friends, and then rate and review the show on iTunes or whatever podcasting app you listen to. That helps other people to find the show, helps the show to grow. The more it grows, you know, the more shows we will continuously be able to produce. All right, that is all. Enjoy today's show. I will be back at the end to sign us off. Thanks.
Yeah, guy.
They want longer yeah guys.
Yeah, friggin' guy.
Remember?
Come on, guy. Why do you have to be like that?
They do.
Down the Line Surf Talk Radio. And we're back. We did this show just a week ago or less, and we decided to do another one because David was on his European vacation.
Work trip.
Some guilt came over him, and he's like, you know what? We should probably do another show.
I was working exhaustively in Europe and decided that I want to work exhaustively here. So,
and we're broadcasting live from the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center in San Clemente, the Smithsonian, if you will, of the surf culture world.
I think one day the Smithsonian is going to be like, we're the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center of everything non-surfing.
Of culture.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it is Tuesday, November 10th, and tomorrow is Veterans Day, and I want to give a shout out to all the veterans out there. Thank you for your service, and that includes my father and my oldest brother and my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, my father-in-law, many, many others, friends. Wow. I'm sure you have some too.
You're the outcast of the family, huh?
The military would not have me.
Yeah. speaking of Europe, I didn't even tell you when we were talking about my trip last time, but I surfed a tidal bore in
Bordeaux. Oh, cool. I saw pictures of it. Yes.
Did you?
I saw pictures of it, yeah.
On Facebook?
Yeah, you did something, Instagram or something.
Somebody tagged
you, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And tagged Boardroom Show, and that's why I saw.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think, or
yeah, maybe he did.
How much were you? Here's like extolling the praises of Boardroom Show Instagram when you were on your beard cover. You're just like, I don't know that guy. No, no. What no, you want to really do is tag Sir Splendor.
He's I didn't even discuss the podcast. Thank I don't you. Know that
that's,
he even listens.
That's where I'm going with this. Thank you. You
David
failed.
Charbonnel, Swope Surfboards is his name.
Yeah,
he's
that's
a surfboard
who, that's
shaper.
Who tagged me.
Yeah. So he's a surfboard shaper. That's right. Probably why he reached out to you. Yeah,
he knows a good thing.
So Tidal Bore, yes. First of all, you know what it is. Maybe listeners do too. Most listeners probably do.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It was rad. Like
this tidal bore happens a lot, right? Where you're,
I don't
like,
know,
like three times a month or something. Like it's not a lunar.
Month,
it's a
though.
Lunar phase thing. Most tidal bores, right?
I don't. Yeah, most tidal bores are, but this one, I don't know if it happens that frequently. Maybe it does.
Yeah, I think
it
there's
like,
one that happens a lot, and it might. I've you know, you, it's funny you say you know about tidal bores, right, Scott? And quite frankly, I don't think I do really know the science behind tidal bores. I want to say, is it a snow melt that like rushes down?
No, I mean, it is a lunar thing. It's basically on the highest tide. The ocean obviously fills up and needs to go somewhere. And if there's a river, it pushes into the river and creates a wave. But it doesn't happen in every river. The bottom contour, the shoreline has to be right, obviously. And there's some tidal bores that are bigger than others. Some of them that barrel that we've seen, like Tom Kern get barreled in Africa somewhere. And so it's basically, it pushes down the river, but it's literally one wave. It's not like there's just one wave a year.
Because I think there's one in Munich or in Germany somewhere along some river that happens.
That's a standing wave.
Okay. Standing wave. That's different than
that's
a tidal bore. Okay.
So this, it's like I was going to meet with David the next day and he texted me the night before and he's like, hey, dude, let's push our meeting. Do you want to go surf this tidal bore? And I was like, okay. Like I'm not sure. I'm totally down for that. I hardly know what they are, but sure. So we get in his car, we're driving down the river, driving down the road that runs parallel with the river, and we were late to it. So like as we're...
Oh my God, the anxiety of being... That's like the wind's picking up, you know?
But there's only one, and it's like doesn't happen often, you know? So it's like...
Wait till next year.
Exactly. So my trip happened to align perfectly with this tide, you know? So we're driving down the river, booking it, and you could see the wave from behind
you're
as
chasing
we're approaching.
The river. Chasing the wave.
Maybe the wave's going 20 miles an hour, and we're going 40. So we're like gaining on it, you know?
Right.
And there's a couple, you could see it, and we're gaining, and then there's
what's
a couple
traffic
guys
like?
On
are
it.
There people in front of you trying to
it's a
race
small,
to
it's
this?
A small road in France. So it's like one way, cars going each direction, or not one
are there
way,
other
one lane.
Surfers racing to get the tidal bore with you. So
yes.
It's like a...
It's the only car
mad dash
totally.
To get in front of the tidal bore.
Totally. So
is it dangerous?
Yeah, because it's. I said
I mean
one
the drive. I mean drive.
I was in the back seat, and it is dangerous because it's narrow roads there, and they're. I said one way, but it's actually two way, but one lane each direction. You know, with like, right. It's dangerous. So anyway, we pass the wave, and we go past it like 30 minutes because you need time to get out, suit up, and the water's cold, so you wear wetsuit and booties and stuff. So then we went past it like 30 minutes. Suited up, jumped in the river, and the tide obviously is pulling out from there towards the ocean. So you jump in and paddle up towards the ocean because if you just jump in where your car is, catch a wave, and then surf for 5 minutes down the river, you got to walk 3 miles back to your car, you know?
Right.
So you jump in the river and go with the tide out towards where the wave is coming from and then spin around and catch it. And if you had enough time, you could paddle farther and therefore get a longer ride. You just need to keep an indicator of where your car's parked so that when you're surfing back, you can head towards shore, jump out. But the tidal difference at that particular part of the river is probably 5 feet. So like when we're walking out to get in the river, you know, there's shoreline and you jump in the water. When you get out, there's no shoreline and there's like a raging current. So it's actually kind of dangerous to try to make the exit. There's trees and rocks and you surf over to the edge, then you put your foot down to like try to gain traction, but you could easily like step in a hole and get your ankle broken because the water's rushing that fast.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
And as you're actually we paddle out, spin around, catch the wave. There was probably like 10 guys on the wave at once. So it's not like you're going to rip it on the shoulder because there's just too many people. You basically just go straight, you know, but it's still a blast because it's an adventure and everybody else is like high-fiving and having a great time. And he had his GoPro, so he was timing it because the video was running, and it was like we got like a 4 minute and 40 second ride, which is pretty rad.
Yeah, like a whitewater ride that's got power and juice and
whitewater ride, but it's also kind of reforming on itself.
You're kind
itself.
Of constantly connecting with it.
Yeah, exactly. And a couple guys ate it. I was the last guy.
If you eat
remaining.
It, you're done, obviously.
Exactly.
But there's a wave behind it, one more
No,
wave.
But there is a wave that's like not breaking behind it, kind
right.
of. Like this just roller.
A
I don't
teaser.
Know if you could actually catch it.
Yeah.
But I was the last guy standing. Like
you
everybody
won.
Kind of wiped out.
You
yeah,
won the heat.
Totally won. But you can, while you're, if you're close enough to the shore bank, to the river bank, you can hear all the rocks getting like sucked up in the wave and trees cracking and stuff.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Hmm.
And this wave wasn't that big. It was probably like waist high, you know, but David said he surfed it when it's like over.
So how many guys are waiting for the waist high wave?
10.
And how many guys are already riding it as you're waiting for it?
There was 10 when we were the last guys on it.
So there was 20 guys total on the
wave? No, 10 total.
10 total.
We were the last guys on it.
And what was the anxiety like? Like, oh shit, I mean, am I not going to catch this wave? Like,
here's the problem. David and the other guy I was with don't speak that great of English. And so they couldn't fully explain to me how to prepare.
They said go and you thought they said no.
Even going to the river, I didn't really understand what was going to happen, you know?
Oh my God.
And
cool.
I thought we were going to have to hike back to the car. Like, I didn't quite get it.
Yeah.
But then once we paddle out and the wave was coming, like, I'm not a beginner surfer, but I was kind of nervous about wiping out on a whitewash.
You know? Sure.
Like, if I'm the only guy here that eats crap on his whitewash, I mean, I can't remember.
You're representing the United States of America,
totally.
David.
And I was riding a longboard, and it turned out it was the easiest thing ever. You spun around, went, and stood up and go. It's like simple, you know.
Yeah.
But that was an adventure.
That's cool.
It was totally rad because you're in Bordeaux, literally like one of the greatest wine regions in the world.
Yeah.
Surfing in a river. Like,
yeah.
Totally unexpected.
That's pretty groovy.
Yeah. I didn't know. Like I said, I only found out the day prior. So
that's sort of a bucket list thing. I've told you before. I think I've told you this, but one of the things that I love to do is do tanker surfing off of Texas. I heard that's really insane. Super
I didn't
fun.
Know that was one of your things.
They've got it down to a science. Like, there's this one guy, I forget his name. He's like a legend in Texas. And, it all has to do with, of course, I think tides, but the draft of the tanker. Like, you want to do a super tanker because it has a way heavier draft, creates a better wave, and the tide has to be low. And, like, there's all these things that get played into it. So it's not like, you know, going to check Surfline. You have to go check the manifest of the shipping industry and find out if they're carrying a heavy load and what their draft is like and then what the tide's like. And
but I would imagine the shipping lanes are pretty active, and so you could probably do it regularly, right?
I don't know. Again, I wish I knew more about it. I think it's not – I don't know if it's a regular thing or if it's 5 times a year or 20 times a month. I really don't know how active it is. I know it's pretty – it seems pretty illegal. Like, all of a sudden you're in a little – you know, you're in your little inflatable.
Right.
And you're jamming towards this massive boat. And it's kind of spooky, I bet, a little bit. Because, you know,
so
if you've ever
spooky.
Been in a little boat next to a super tanker, you're like, holy shit.
It's so spooky.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a weird animal instinct in your human brain that remains from thousands of years ago. That fear that kicks in next to a giant object like that.
Yeah.
It's weird. It's hard to even put into words. Like, I haven't been on a small boat next to a big boat like that, but I've been next to a cruise ship on the dock.
Yeah.
And it's just frightening for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's really weird. I can't imagine what a whale looks like, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well, there's a new movie out. By the way.
That Moby Dick movie.
Yeah. I've read that book. It's a great book. You should read it. It's
Moby
a true
Dick?
No, it's called In the Heart of the Sea. And it's a nonfiction story that tells the story of that Moby Dick situation.
Okay.
If I sort of butchered that, but I would just urge you to read it. It's called In the Heart of the Sea.
Well, I would love to read it because I actually just finished Moby Dick on this trip, this Europe trip.
Oh, well, you'll love this book.
Okay.
This book's insanely good.
Okay.
Because
I realized a number of years ago, like, there's all these classic books that people just always talk about that I've never read.
Crime and Punishment.
I haven't read it.
My daughter has to read it, and I read page one. It's Dostoevsky.
Yeah.
And
Dostoevsky? Or?
I'm probably butchering it.
Yeah.
I want to say Dostoevsky. I think that's probably a composer.
Dostoevsky? No, I'm going to butcher it.
I don't
it
know, but it's some Russian.
There's more.
Dude.
No, I know who it is. But, Dostoevsky.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Dostoevsky. And I read page one, and it was she was all concerned that it was going to be a hard book to read, but it was actually engaging. Like, it wasn't difficult. It was page one was like, yeah, let's read this, you know, for what it's worth.
Well, so based on that, I was like, I started reading all these classics and like Hemingway and like all sorts of stuff. But Moby Dick is arguably one of the greatest books I've ever read. Like, it's phenomenally good.
And you're going to enjoy watching this movie and seeing and reading this book. You're okay. going to... I'm assuming.
No, I'm going to commit. Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't expect Moby Dick to actually be good.
Yeah.
I was like, it's outdated and it's going to have, like, the language actually is outdated, but you understand all of it.
Yeah.
But it's also, the storyline, of course, is very, very intriguing. And then secondly, it's just poetic. It's like you could pick up the book in the middle, crack it open to a random page, read a paragraph, and be absolutely enthralled by just the poetry of the language.
Right.
Like, it's that interesting.
Herman Melville,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, who also did not have success as an author until after he died, which is always interesting to me.
Yeah, it seems like that's always the case. So I think publishers, you know, you always hear about, like, they got a scam going. They're like, your book sucks. Wait till he dies, then we'll publish it and make all the money.
They try to hook up with writers who are, like, in their 80s, so they have to wait less.
What have you written in the past 20 years?
Yeah.
Kind of interesting. Well, a lot of good books out there.
Yeah. In regard to the title bore.
Yes.
Did you see this article about designer reefs?
No.
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah. Go ahead, and then I've got a segue.
But. Yeah. Well, basically, it was Stab Mag covered this thing. It's talking about somebody in Australia basically created a designer reef that was supposed to protect beachside properties, which it did successfully.
Where?
I don't know the exact location.
Somewhere,
I'll pull it up.
In Australia.
Yeah, I'll pull it up while we're talking. But basically, it's made up of a series of geotextile sandbags bound together in the shape of a triangle with a gap in the middle that lets water run back out, but it actually creates a little rip bowl. So it made a super sick wave, like in different style of wave too. Like, there was the rip bowl, little wedgy thing, and then there was like A-frame on the left and the right, and then or on either side going either way. And different conditions made the wave break differently, but it was all good. And it actually ended up falling apart because boats would go out there and their anchors would actually rip the bags apart and then the sand would get dispersed. But it was kind of an interesting study of, like, we could actually
Well, they've made a few reefs
map
like
this out.
This.
Yeah.
And this one in Australia, there's one in Australia they did out of this geotextile bags. And it wasn't the greatest wave they had hoped for, but it turned into kind of a slabby wave, and the boogie boarders kind of took over, and it was a short little slabby wave. I'm not sure if this is the same reef that you're talking about.
Doesn't seem like it is.
But they also did this right near where you live. I want to say 15 years ago or something.
Okay.
They attempted to put bags of sand down, and I want to say it was in San Pedro or just – is there a place between Seal Beach and San Pedro?
Long Beach.
It might have been Long Beach. It might have been El Segundo, or not El Segundo, but anyway, it was somewhere in there where – and the surf rider was sort of tiptoeing around being behind this. You know, they weren't like totally on board, but some of the surf rider people were. And the idea was artificial reefs. Let's build artificial reefs because it'll be good. You know, obviously from the surf rider standpoint, I imagine they thought it'll be good for the local marine environment to have more reefs for things to flourish and food to eat and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But it failed. And I apologize to say I'm not exactly sure, but I would urge you to Google.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in England, they tried this recently, and it was a huge failure.
This one, by the way,
Bournemouth. I want to say Bournemouth Artificial Reef in Bournemouth, maybe?
Okay, I don't know that. Well, this one was off the coast of Narrowneck on Australia's Gold Coast.
Yeah, this is the one that I've heard about.
Okay.
Well, it's not new, right? It's been there for a while.
Well, there's never actually been any successful attempts, it seems, to create a reef solely for the purpose of producing waves. In this article, they said the New Zealand-based company ASR.
Yeah, that's the company, okay, right.
Produced ASR. Three multi-purpose reefs throughout
I've interviewed those guys, actually, on this show.
Oh, have
ASR
you?
ASR guys, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. None of them have lived up to the expectation. This one random one that they built for thwarting coastal erosion for these beachside properties actually was randomly, you know, better than the others. But I'm just curious, what's the downside to this? Like, this seems awesome. Can we do this everywhere and just...
Well, you know, and again, I'm not a scientist, so I can't really answer that. But as as a guy who slept in a really good hotel last night, I feel like I might be able to answer this.
I'm not sure what that means.
Well, you know that ad, that commercial, that ad campaign about, you know, the guy's dying on the side of the road, and he goes, "Get out of the way! I'll help." You know, and they go, "Are you a surgeon?" He goes, "No, but I slept in a DoubleTree last night, so I feel great."
Wow, look at you giving DoubleTree some extra play on the podcast.
I think it was DoubleTree. So the answer is there's probably issues with natural flow of sediment and the natural longshore current and how that gets affected if you just drop stuff in the ocean. You know, is there going to be now a depositional coast where there wasn't a depositional coast? Is there going to be erosion where before there wasn't erosion based on currents flowing in and around these bags that you drop?
Right.
You know, so I think nobody really knows, and both sides have valid arguments about why we should not do this.
Yeah, you're probably right, almost certainly that you're right, but I don't know. It seems like they can navigate around a lot of those issues.
Well, I always say, well, what about the millions or let's say thousands of
jetties?
Those are great for waves, but the thousands of just shipwrecks, guess what? It seems like there's, but, you know, now they tout shipwrecks as the greatest thing ever because it does create artificial reefs for the fauna, you know, for the marine life to, you know, habitate. And is that a word? Habitate? Did I just make up a word?
I'm not sure.
I like that word. Habitate.
Yeah.
I'm going to go habitate.
We'll use it. So
anyway, could be good, could be bad. We don't know. It's like an old Buddhist.
I'm excited at the prospect. When you look at, like, we talk about wave pools on the show and other artificial stuff, it's like, this is a way better prospect than any of those. I mean, I guess it's still in the ocean, so you can't, like, transplant it to the middle of America or something.
Yeah.
But what?
It's interesting that you say that because they just announced the Surf Park Summit 2, which is happening, I guess, about a year from now, next September at Surf Expo out in Orlando. And Surf Park Summit 1 was all of these manufacturers getting together and sort of going, hey, man, let's not be enemies. Let's try to figure this out together. We all really want the same thing. And that was interesting in and of itself because you got all these companies that are super secretive trying. Some of them wouldn't show up and had a spokesperson come and say.
Yeah.
You know, like it was interesting just the political play that was happening there. And you know, I think these people, the reason I smile is I think these people would have input into you know, what seems to you and I to be a no-brainer. Let's just drop some geotextile bags at this place where there aren't any waves now and there could be waves then.
Which benefits all the surfers who live by the coast. But the wave pool people, I think, are really looking to bring waves inland oftentimes, you know, and expand the surfing base.
Which brings a huge moral question. Like, is that really good? Like, how is that good for David and Scott? Like, if you and I are just sort of, you know, a great little subsection of true coastal dwelling surfers, how is it good for us?
Well,
because they want to say that it's really good.
Well, it's good for you because you have the boardroom show, and next year there'll be more people attending the boardroom show.
Absolutely.
That's what it's for.
Absolutely. And then, there's tons of benefits for the boardroom show.
And then if you can no longer afford to live on the coast, you can move inland and still get to surf inland. You know what I mean? Like that,
for sure.
That's a real practical concern for...
You know, you and I have talked about this before too, that a lot of people have said, well, what good is, like, there's hardcore people that are like, what good are surf condos anyway? I never watch them. They're lame. It's not what surfing's all about. And I just was banging over here on this side.
Yeah, watch it.
And I remember that we were at Surfer Magazine. We had edit meetings about this. You know, like, can we prove that competitive surfing has been good to the average guy that hates competitive surfing?
Interesting.
And Chris Morrow would be better to elaborate on this because he wrote the article and he did the research on it. But it basically came down to, hey, man, without contest surfing, you could argue that there wouldn't be the three-fin thruster. Like, Simon validated that design. Look, there were three-fin surfboards before Simon Anderson's three-fin surfboard.
Sure.
But because he went out and won pipeline on it and surfed huge bells on a 6'4", and everyone's jaw just dropped the lines that were being now made on this design, you know, that's an example of contest surfing helping the average layperson that hates competitive surfing and the whole concept of it. And Chris went out to lay out a bunch of other examples of how, because basically what he was saying is that competition proves performance. And if we have to keep upping the performance, we're going to keep looking for new technologies and new designs and new ways to get better at what we're being judged upon.
Right.
And although it doesn't seem like in the spotlight it makes sense or it helps the average guy, when it trickles down, all of a sudden the average guy gets a tri-fin under his feet and he's like, God, this board works way better than that 7.6 pintail I was riding in Huntington Beach. Now yeah. I'm riding a 6.4 tri-fin, same volume, and I'm able to surf with so much more freedom. And gosh, I love this board. Well, that same guy was, you know, was poo-pooing contests.
Right.
And the same could be said then, I guess what I'm trying to do is draw that parallel to the guy that hates the idea of surf parks or artificial waves and that they're not going to affect me ever. And the answer is we really don't know that. There could be trickle down that could be amazing. And some of that trickle down could be, in fact, artificial reefs that are dropped into the ocean that we learned about through surf parks inland, you know, technologies that we learned about.
Right.
And so you just don't know.
Well, and for the example you gave about the thruster, then there's probably downside to that as well, you know, and then
more people in the water,
more people in the water. And then actually surfboards went way too small and low volume and potato chippy. And so that threw off a bunch of people.
That wasn't
people started
really,
riding equipment, yeah. But that was driven by contest because that's what Kelly Slater
that's
was winning
true.
On or whatever, you know?
No, that's true.
And so
that was just like a market correction though. I mean, I don't,
yeah, it is. It's yeah, it is. But I'm just saying like you can make, the purists who are riding the Jerry Lopez single fin, you know, whatever, like never received any of that benefit. And in fact, if they tried to get on that other board and ride it, they would have had a horrible time and maybe quit surfing, or maybe people didn't get into surfing because that board had so much limitation on it that they never got past the stage of sitting on it and paddling,
right.
You know, like,
right.
And I'm stretching, but
yeah, no, that's what we do here.
Yeah.
We stretch for a good pod.
Yeah.
It's like yoga for the brain.
That's true.
Stretching for good pod.
That was a straight warrior pose right there.
I did some yoga yesterday. It was epic.
That's a good reminder. Speaking of yoga and Jerry Lopez boards, Jerry Lopez.
Yeah, Jerry Lopez is going to be the honoree at the boardroom this spring in 2016 as we kick off the summer season at the boardroom. And the Icons of Foam tribute to the Masters shape off. Honoring Jerry Lopez. So yeah, everyone's excited about that.
Very excited.
Yeah, it's
gonna be cool. What was your segue out of the designer reef topic you said?
The Surf Park Summit,
oh, okay.
Too. They've
that
announced,
was
there was a press release okay. This week about, they've announced it. And selfishly, last time they had it here in Laguna, I was the moderator or the master
okay.
of ceremonies.
I see.
So selfishly, I'm trying to get that gig again. I sent an email and I've yet to receive a response. So I'm thinking they don't want me.
Thinking it didn't go so well last time.
I guess not.
So
the price is right though.
here's the funny thing. That word MC, you're like, I was the master of ceremonies, which is obviously the right term. And then they'll shorten it and say MC. But if you look up in the dictionary, there's a word that is E-M-C-E-E.
Really?
Yeah. Like right. You just think MC is short.
What's the MC, the word spelled out, mean? Same thing?
It means the same thing.
Master of Ceremonies?
Yes.
Oh,
E-M-C-E-E
right.
Means to be the Master of Ceremonies.
Oh.
Isn't that a weird trend?
That like, is. You'd think it would just be an
abbreviation.
Abbreviation.
I think it started out as an abbreviation, and then enough people used it saying...
Some linguist got a hold of it and said, that's not right.
Yeah. And I've looked... I've come across that in the past. That's why I'm saying it, but I'm going to look it up now because I'm starting to feel like someone's going to call me out on it.
That's what we do here.
Some listener's going to be like, that is so incorrect.
We say things that are wrong so that you may respond. I mean, it's wonders, does wonders for our inbox.
Yeah, Matt, that's exactly what I just said. E-M-C-E-E, Master of Ceremonies is the definition. So that's a weird tidbit that has nothing to do with surfing.
Well, speaking of Master of Ceremonies, I'll segue into this. The Surfer Pole Awards is happening probably, I think it happens right around the beginning of the Pipe Masters, like December 6th or something like that, right? Happens on the North Shore at Turtle Bay. And the Surfer Pole Awards is probably, I don't know, it's been going on since 1964 or 1961 or something, whenever Surfer Magazine started.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically like a popularity contest. It sort of turned into a popularity contest.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done my own Surfer Pole for this show. I've got my top 10. I'm going to list them out for you, David, and you can comment on my top 10.
I can't wait.
And I will say this, that my Surfer Pole isn't necessarily most popular. I see the Surfer Pole as who's the most interesting. So my Surfer Pole, these are my top 10
I'm dying with anticipation.
I've only done men, by the way.
Shocking.
No, women will be next week.
Okay, shocking.
I think. Number 10 in the Surfer Bowl for 2015.
Scott Bass's.
Do you have any sort of like...
drum roll music?
Yeah, drum roll or anything?
Nope.
Number 10 Surfer Bowl, Dane Reynolds.
Okay.
I have some notes here on Dane. I say his departure from Quicksilver is relatively interesting. He has this young family. Of course, Dane's the poster child for the, you know, who gives a damn, I just want to surf sort of clan. He's interesting, I think, Dane, for as much for what he doesn't do as for what he does do.
Very true.
And he sort of hibernates. He did so early in 2015. Then he kind of comes out of the woodwork.
I thought that was in reference to his physique.
Well, he does look like the Unabomber a little bit. He hibernates. He comes out for wild cards. Then he disappears for a while. However, if Dane's not careful, I think his wife's Instagram could quickly earn this spot next year because I find her almost more interesting than Dane Reynolds.
Napkin apocalypse.
Thank you.
Not his wife, but his girlfriend.
Yeah, if they're not married, they should be.
Baby mama.
They have a child together, yeah. And her Instagrams are fascinating.
Yeah.
And I, you've got to agree that if you didn't, if you were from the Wall Street Journal, you might be more interested in interviewing her than interviewing Dane Reynolds.
Absolutely. Agreed.
Number 9, Adriano De Souza.
Wow.
Lovingly known as Bronco De Souza on this show, thanks to our friend Tony Roberts.
I did not see that coming.
He's interesting because he's our blue-collar Brazilian, right? I mean, I love the fact that he is so determined. He's just got that blue-collar. He's got a work ethic that I wish more North American surfers had that didn't
entirely.
Have – they didn't have this entitlement. And he doesn't have that. And granted, he has this sort of – what I like to call a no-style style, you know, this hideous, like Tony Roberts put it, right? Bronco De Souza. He looks like he's riding down the wave as if he's about to lasso a steer with, you know, his right arm.
If you photoshopped a Bronco under his legs, that looks like what he's doing.
He does. He's Bronco De Souza.
8 seconds.
It's a loving term.
I don't know that it's loving, but it's definitely well thought
I'm
out.
A fan of Bronco De Souza.
Yours was crazy.
But not his surf style. Okay. Just that his blue collarness, I'll let you go.
Well, side note.
He's determined.
I love
the determination in him.
I feel like through osmosis, you have taken on my opinion about Adriano, because I feel like a year ago, you would not have had Adriano on this, and I'm a fan of his work ethic, and I feel like now...
I think you might be right.
I think I've influenced you for the better.
I think you have. And quite frankly, after hearing your opinion of him and then watching it through that prism, I absolutely see that.
I agree with you.
And I absolutely appreciate his blue-collar determination.
I agree.
I absolutely dislike his style.
Agreed. We don't
want to
watch
him
surf. But I like
him as a person. He gives great post-heat interviews.
Totally. We don't want to watch him surf, but we need him there so that he can infuse some of that into everybody else.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm on board.
He's not a necessary evil. He's better than that.
Agreed.
Number 8, Matt Parker from Album Surfboards.
Yep.
I know that's a dark horse to many of you, but Matt has been crafting these aesthetically pleasing surfboards. They're shiny, they're sexy, they're
gorgeous.
They're different, they're gorgeous. You can tell the craftsmanship is a big part of his persona, you know, that he cares for his product.
Yeah, not just aesthetically pleasing. The craftsmanship.
No, they rip.
Yeah.
And they're in
design.
If there's one board that I want, it's an album surfboard. Like, yeah. If you could say, Scott, I'm going to give you a surfboard, it's an album surfboard.
Yep.
Now, the reason that that he's on my list is because I do subscribe to his Instagram feed. So I see these boards come through his Instagram feed constantly.
Yeah.
And that helps to, you know, garner my interest.
Mm-hmm.
And because I see him, he's on, you know, those boards are on my mind a lot. I'm like, oh man, that guy makes really nice boards.
Yeah.
So anyway, Matt Parker, he's one to watch out for. He's number 8 on my Surfer Poll 2015.
Very cool.
I'm not sure if he was invited to the Turtle Bay Hilton or not. He might.
Well, if we get enough people to vote for him, he could be.
Voting's over. Voting's over. Yeah.
Well, we're in San Clemente at the Surfing Heritage and Culture Center. Album Surfboards is in San Clemente, right next to Knoll Surfboards.
Jed Knoll's, yeah.
So.
I'm afraid to go in there. If I go in there, I probably more than likely buy a board, and I don't have the money for that.
Well, you've already maxed out your 3 board a month quota this month, or what?
No. I'm on a strict diet. I'm trying to thin the herd, and I don't. It's a long story. I won't get into it now, but I'm trying to not have so many material possessions.
I see.
I really don't.
Sounds
need
like a topic of discussion.
It is later, but okay. Not in the middle of the Surfer Pole Awards.
Got it. Put a pin in it.
Number 7, Surfer Pole 2015. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for a loud roaring approval applause for Mr. Mason Ho.
Yeah! I'm on board with that for sure.
Number 7.
For sure. Doesn't even need an explanation.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. But to me, he's this happy-go-lucky character that he's always going to – there just seems to be a lot of energy about him. He performs in contests. He does these incredible edits. The North Shore is coming up. I'm sure we're going to see a lot of Mason Ho here in the next 2 months. To me, he's sort of like Jamie O'Brien 6.0. Like he's the adorable, approachable Jamie. Like something crazy is going to happen, something mesmerizing. He's going to do something at Pipeline that just blows your mind. And Mason comes from this great lineage, and he's just a great guy. So Mason Ho is number 7.
Huge fan.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than 1 billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Number 6, Surfer Pole. Top 10 for 2015.
Spill it.
Gabe Medina. He's my favorite black hat wearing bad guy. Claims, and more claims. Everyone has to root against somebody, and I root against Gabby. He's got an incredible talent. Deep down in my heart, I know he's a nice young man. Our world champion, by the way, a competitive force. He's good for the WSL. We need to have these types of people on tour. He's very interesting. He's not boring. And it would be boring without him on tour. That's why he's on my surfer pole.
Not going to argue with you.
Number 6.
He wouldn't be on mine, but...
He wouldn't make your top 10 surfer pole. He's the world champion.
Definitely not, but everything that you said in your explanation is true, so therefore I'm not going to argue.
All right. Number 5. The entire quiver of WSL commentators.
Nice.
Joe Terpel, Martin Potter, Rosie Hodge, Ross Williams, Strider Wasilewski, Peter Mell, Ronnie Blakey. I'm sure I've missed a few.
Not in that order.
Right. Just all of them. Let's face it.
Ronnie Blakey would be right at the top.
Well, I'm just saying the WSL commentators, exactly. They are interesting. If you watch the WSL, most of us do, they are a part of your life. More a part of your life than the surfers.
Sure.
And that's really the fault of the WSL. That should not be the case.
Yeah.
But they are what they are. They're a huge part of the production, and they are a part of our lives.
Right.
And for that very reason, they're interesting. By osmosis, they're on this list because we see them, we watch them, we talk about them in parking lots, in the surf, out of the surf, at the supermarket. More Rosie Hodge, please.
Definitely more Rosie. Here's what's interesting about the team that I did not expect at all is how awesome Ross Williams is. Like, I grew up loving Ross Williams as a surfer, but he never stood out as like the most interesting personality or even the most, the smartest or the most witty or the most knowledgeable or analytical or any of that stuff. He was just like kind of a
vanilla,
lower tier WCT surfer that did
these
huge.
He was Brett Simpson.
No, because Brett's got personality, though.
Yeah, but you didn't know it until you saw it. But now you know. Well, now
you
know.
But even Ross doesn't.
Well, now you know it because there's social media. Like, you would know Ross back in the mid-90s. You would know that stuff if there had been all of this.
Well, okay, let me actually tease it apart. Brett's got mass appeal because he's funny. Ross, he wouldn't be good on Instagram. He wouldn't be good on tour notes. He wouldn't be good in it. He's just really good at commentary and analyzing waves. And so it's interesting that the WSL picked up on that because he probably was in the booth for some of the Reef events in Hawaii because he was working with Reef forever.
And it was instantly obvious.
And it was instantly obvious that, like, no, he's not like a comedian and he's not like the best looking or he's not what, but
he's
really good behind the mic at analyzing surfing and commenting on waves. And it's like, I didn't expect that and I love it. I think he's killing it.
Yeah, he's a natural.
So, next.
Yeah. Number four, Surfer Paul.
Yeah.
This is going to surprise many people. John Florence, number four. Potential, still spelled with a capital P for John Florence. We know that he's got it all.
Okay, capital P.
P for potential.
Oh.
Potential spelled with a capital P.
Got it.
And the key here is, can we reach that potential? It seems like one year he does these incredible like, I'm just waiting for that year where he puts it all together, where his free surfing, his competitive surfing, his moments at Pipeline and Chopu, his moments in Australia, it all comes together so that not only is he the greatest free surfer in the world, and my apologies to Teddy Allen, who hates that term, so he's not the, but he's also our world champion in the competitive format.
Yeah. Well, yeah, a lot of thoughts on John. We go over these thoughts all the time.
Yeah.
But
number four, my surfer pole.
Yeah. Do you think he's actually going to fulfill the potential that we all see?
I do too.
I want to, well, it'll I kind of want to just believe in the dream
bit. It'll be a big letdown. I know we were both kind of hesitant there.
Well, because how much
what
of it
could stop him is the question. What could
a
stop?
Lot of things. Felipe Toledo, Gabriel Medina.
I'm thinking outside forces.
Plenty of those as well.
Yeah.
But I do think like his level of talent is almost unstoppable. It's going to push through.
My concern for him is that he doesn't rest on his laurels. And just go, you know what? I'm the pipe champion. I'm John. I'm going to get paid no matter what. Everything's good. I'll just be happy to be in the top 10 for the next 10 years on the WSL.
See, I don't think that he's ever rested on his laurels.
I don't either. That's my scare.
But I don't think he's also necessarily been driven in the way that Adriano's driven. He's to the point that he's at because he's just that talented. And so there's not drive pushing him forward and there's no resting on his laurels. He surfs longer than anybody. Everybody will tell you. Like he'll serve eight plus hours a day.
I guess what I'm saying is that if it is our hope that someday he becomes the world champion, to get to that point, I think that there's some internal machinations that need to occur to kind of flip the switch a little bit more to get more of that Adriano determination. Now, some might argue, hey, you do that and now you've ruined the mix here. You
know, and I agree with
ruined the recipe.
I agree with actually both those things, that those happen. But what I think I'm looking at is like Gabriel Medina is liable to fall off the podium because he's driving at 110% and you can't do that forever. John, his natural state,
slow and steady,
is slow and steady, but he's not really trying that hard. He's just that talented. And I think he's actually talented enough to win a world title without really having that 110% drive that Gabriel had to have to get where he got. And he's unbelievably talented as well. I just think John will get there because the waves will be pumping at Cloudbreak and he'll win out there. Waves will be pumping at Lowers. He's liable to win out there in a year. pumping at Pipeline. He'll win out there and he'll get enough wins strung together because the waves were great everywhere we went. And he's the best surfer in great waves. You know what I mean? So the problem is when you get crappy Gold Coast and he gets a loses in the third
everybody
round.
Everybody gets crappy Gold Coast.
Yeah, I know. Right? But I don't know.
He's going to have to overcome. That's not stopping Adriano de Souza. That's
about exactly.
So that's where the switch needs to be like ramped up or turned on, I guess.
We're rooting
for him. Not to mix metaphors. Number three in the surfer poll. This is going to surprise people. Number three.
They're all going to surprise people.
Felipe Toledo is my number three most interesting surfer in 2015.
All right.
Blazing through an early WSL season in Australia, grabbed the title, ran with it into the middle of the season where he fell on his face more or less. Now he's again tightening his clasp on this on contest points and stuff. And really, he's leading the charge, I would suggest, more than anybody as far as reinventing what you can do in the air with a contest jersey on.
Agreed. And, no question.
And it's truly amazing. And we should – you get the feeling it's sort of like when Tiger Woods came on tour. It's like, wow, you want to watch this. You know, like this is must-watch TV. And sadly, you and I want to see the judges kind of get to that same spot and be able to handle what and decipher what Felipe's doing in the air.
Yeah.
So he's the number three most interesting surfer for 2015.
And not just in the air, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, he's like his rail turns at the beach breaks in Europe and then also at lowers and places like that are unbelievable. So fast, so sharp, so and then combo just the crap out of everything. He's got the full game in those style of waves.
Yep.
So
number two, most interesting surfer for 2015, Kelly Slater. Kelly's still the man. He transcends our culture, David, and mingles among the elite class, golfing, clubbing, TED-talking, and then paddles out.
I didn't see the TED Talk.
As one of us, and continues to be amazing. I threw the TED Talking in just because it sounded good.
Oh, okay.
He needs to do a TED Talk.
You are in love. You are. It's, dude, your whole demeanor changed when you start talking about Kelly.
Kelly's the man.
You apparently so.
You don't think he's number two and most interesting surfer?
No.
Where is he on your list? Okay, when's your list coming
Keep out? Preaching, dude.
Okay, number one. Number one most interesting surfer for 2015.
I can't even
Who could imagine. It be?
Well, based on this list, it could be, I don't know.
Laird?
Anybody?
No, it's not Laird. William Finnegan. Is my most interesting surfer for 2015. He's crafted words that more or less eluded surf scribes for decades. And in downplaying surf culture, almost embarrassed by the surf world he lives in, he's banged the hammer on the nail head, allowing thousands of surfers, David, like you and I, to simply hand his memoir to our wives, our girlfriends, our parents, and our teachers and say, just read it. It is true. Only a surfer knows the feeling. And only Finnegan was able to come close to describing and disseminating that feeling with words that reach the masses. The New York Times bestseller list. The surf world's getting older. The masses, young and old alike, are savvy, smart, educated, and simply over an artificial surf culture run by industry. An ongoing theme for decades. And Finnegan, through omission of anything superficial to the real surf, hardcore surf experience, hit it out of the park. William Finnegan is my number one surfer poll of the year.
Author of Barbarian Days.
Right.
So I feel like Finnegan's writing just inspired you to write that paragraph about William Finnegan. That was the most beautiful, poetic
it's the only paragraph
words
I've ever
that
written.
I've ever heard you say. Like you strung together some pure poetry right there.
Yeah, I think I was inspired by Greg Gutfeld.
Okay. How so?
I'll just leave it at that.
I think you just
that would probably make William Finnegan vomit in his mouth a little bit.
Yeah, I think you just infused Finnegan through yourself.
Maybe
that was pretty impressive, dude.
Yeah, there's my list.
No one's gonna
want me to go
that.
Through it again.
Nope,
I'm
not
gonna
at all.
10 Dane Reynolds, nope. 9 Adriano de Souza, 8 Matt Parker, 7 Mason Ho, 6 Gabe Medina, 5 WSL commentators, 4 John, 3 Felipe Toledo, 2 Kelly Slater, number 1 William Finnegan.
Sweet. I'll come up with my own list later.
Yeah, the surfer poll.
Yeah, I'll do it later and we'll discuss it then.
You can't have anyone that I have.
Fair enough. I don't want them.
You're kidding.
No.
You've got interesting people that aren't on my list?
I'll take Mason. That's it.
Wow.
And Jonjo.
Oh my God. Here we go. Who else? You're not going to take Felipe? I know you. Felipe's.
Let me
it.
Think about
okay,
it. I want to put thought.
Yeah, I'm ruining it. All
right. So, did you see Shaper's Roundtable on Surfline?
I did.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I was kind of bored by it.
Were you really?
I look, I got to say, I didn't watch it all. I was in a hurry. I flipped it on and I watched the first 30 seconds and I turned it off.
Wow.
And I got to give it more time.
You
so
do.
It's not me. It's not them. It's me.
Okay.
I was in a hurry. I was hoping to be instantly engaged and the discussion was sort of
pedestrian?
Long-winded.
Okay.
And the storytelling was slow.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't like, you know, in this age of digital dissemination, right? We just sort of want bang, bang, bang. What? Get to the point, you know? And these were well thought out. I'm sure they were great stories, but they were just like, you know, I don't know. The very first thing about, I guess, was when did you first see
Simon Anderson's thruster?
Yeah. That took a long time. Somebody needed to edit that down or something. I don't know. If your
Fair
thoughts
enough.
On the pacing of it was what caused problems with me, the pacing of the story.
And I agree. So Surfline did this Shaper's Roundtable video series. There's like four or five videos, 5 to 10 minutes each. So maybe it's 30, 40 minutes total. And it's Rusty Priesendorfer, Eric Arakawa, Matt Biolis, Darren Hanley, and Britt Merrick, Al Merrick's son, sitting around a round table discussing board design, cultural implications, like different shapers that have come and gone, whatever. And you and I are somebody that do this podcast and interview people and try to develop and cultivate story. So this fits perfectly with what we do. And I'm actually craving more content like that. And so that's why I'm always interested. And I kind of give it a pass in a sense. Like, I just want the content, so I'll pay attention to whatever it is. But I agree with you that it was marginally executed. They've done a better job in the past when they've done other roundtables. Like, they did a world champ roundtable at some point, and that was really good, I thought. This, I agree. It was also, you and I are in the scene enough to where we've already heard all these stories. And like, I've interviewed Eric Howell, and he used almost the same verbatim way of describing. I mean, he's probably told these stories 100 times already, so he just has a way of saying it. But it's kind of like, yeah, I already know this part. And I would hope that the person, the producer, and the person who's actually asking the questions would dig a little bit deeper and not design it for the pedestrian, like, you know, initial surf fan. Like, most people on there watching something like that are you and I, actually. So let's go deeper. You
know? And I also think that to that point, it's okay to not reach, you know, the aspiring surfer. Like, in other words, when you and I first were interested in surfing, we picked up Surfer Magazine and we just started looking through it. And they didn't explain to us what the situation was going, you know, like, you just dove into it because you were going from aspirational surfer to becoming an enthusiast, and you just learned about it on your own. And so they always took sort of a higher approach to, hey, look, if you don't know this, too bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I will suggest that perhaps, and this may or may not be the case, but if you put five of the best shapers in the world together, most of them are going to be comfortable with each other. But I wonder if you got them separately, if you'd get a better interview or better answers or more insight without them being concerned about stepping on somebody's toes or egos being involved. And if I say it this way, you know, I don't want to upset some, you know, like, they're just being nice and, you know, being cordial around a room of – now, maybe they just all are good buddies anyway, and that's just the way it was going to be with or without them, you know?
Yeah.
I know with Rusty, for instance, he's not going to hold back. He's just going to tell it how it is. Or he'll have, you know, he's smart enough to know what to say and what not to say,
exactly,
whether somebody's in the room or not. So I just, you know, I need to give it another look. Like I said, I only went into the first 35 seconds of it, and then I had to leave. So, well, I need to give it more time. But my initial thing was, wow, can you get me some information, I, you know, that's a little bit more, something I can chew on.
Yeah. Well, I put it on in the background while I was working on the computer. So I was listening to it more than I was watching it. And that was adequate.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I put this topic on my notes because I wanted to discuss that I liked it. And I haven't said anything that nice about it at all yet. Because I did like it until you just kind of said what you said. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Actually, it left me wanting a little bit. But flip side, they also do this series. Surfline does a series called Talk Story. And they did one recently with Rob Machado talking about the Billabong Challenge back in the mid-90s.
Okay, this interests me a lot. Did you and I talk about...
No.
Okay, so when you were gone, Surfline did this thing called the Birth of the Dream Tour.
Oh,
and
okay.
They pinned the entire thing around the New York City Quicksilver Pro and how that was somehow the birth of the Dream Tour.
Okay.
Which I just went, what?
Yeah, I'm
because
not
the
signed
Dream
on to
Tour,
that.
The Dream Tour started with these Billabong events with Jack McCoy
yeah.
getting the best surfers in the world, four or five or ten or however many.
Eight.
And taking them to Western Australia and pitting them up at Red Bluff or wherever it was and filming it. And Rabbit Bartholomew was a part of
yep.
those events. And when Rabbit became the president of the ASP, he basically said, we're going to do those Billabong challenges, but with the entire tour.
Yep.
And that is the birth of the Dream Tour. And I had a big problem with Surfline sort of claiming the birth of the Dream Tour based around an event in New York in 2013 or whatever it was.
Yeah,
and
20 years later.
Yeah, it just blew me away that they were kind of making that claim without any acknowledgement whatsoever about Rabbit, about the Billabong. And,
yeah.
and it made me think, you know what? Maybe they just don't know. Maybe they really do think that that was the birth of the Dream Tour because they were able to find a spot that doesn't really get good waves that often, use Sean Collins' expertise, and determine the exact week that if they're going to do it, they're going to do it. And then all the things aligned.
Well,
it was great. And by the way, Sean deserves all the credit in the world. I'm not trying to take away anything from what they did for the New York event, but to claim that that was the birth of the Dream Tour, I remember going, wow, they don't know their history.
Well, Surfline used the wrong word or the wrong term because that was the dream event, maybe, that went perfectly. It went off on all cylinders.
Well, there was a lot of dream events, though.
But
I mean, Sean was,
agreed,
was forecasting dream events, you know, when they had the G-Land event.
Perfect.
In perfect G-Land in whatever year that was.
Well, I would argue, though,
Quicksilver G-Land Pro.
My understanding of the Dream Tour...
98 or something.
My understanding of the Dream Tour is that it was over by the time that New York event happened.
Oh, it was.
So, like, that New York event, ever since then, we haven't had any Dream Tour at all, actually.
Yeah.
We've had, like, hit and misses. Prior, the Dream Tour was when it was the best waves in the world on tour,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Regardless of how many viewers were paying attention
to exactly.
it. No, exactly. So it was the Billabong Challenge up until New York. It was that time. So that's kind of totally a misnomer on their part.
I was surprised that they were kind of, and maybe, you know,
well, they
maybe
did.
I'm being too sensitive to it, but I just, that they wouldn't make mention. But then, so to get to your point, right, now they do this thing with Rob. And him looking back on those Billabong challenges, those were the seeds of the Dream Tour.
So Rob, he's talking about one specific event. I think it was the first one they did. He won it. And the concept was, it was kind of in an effort to break away from the three to the beach mentality. And Rabbit was the contest director. Jack McCoy was there to film and document the whole thing. And they made a movie about it. And they had a 2-week waiting period. They actually got skunked for 13 out of the 14 days, and then they ran on the final day, and the waves were like 6 to 8 foot pumping. Naraloo, I think, is the spot.
Yeah.
And the guys who went to the event, the eight surfers, it was Kelly, Rob, Johnny Boy Gome, Shane Powell, Brendan Marginson.
Sonny, probably.
Sonny, yeah, I forget.
Yeah.
Aki, did I say Ock?
Ock
was there.
Aki.
And then they didn't even know where they were going. They just were told, we're going to this mystery spot in the desert. Pack your bags, you know? And Rob was explaining, you know, it's Western Oz, and like they're just wasting time for 13 days, and they'd walk out on the reef, and literally sharks would come up onto the reef and like be thrashing around, and then they'd like thrash their way back into the ocean. And the guys were like, this is so gnarly out here. It's so rugged. Like, sharks, we could see these sharks in the lineup right here. And they got tons of wind, rain, and then the final day it just turned on. And they
yeah.
got this epic event. And they couldn't hear, they didn't know what the scores were. You know, it was just like, you're out there surfing. And he said it was kind of gentleman's rules because it's so rugged and dangerous that you don't want to really push each other. So whoever kind of paddled out first would get the first wave. And Rob ended up winning it. But my point is, they did a great job with this talk story piece.
Oh, good.
As opposed to the Shapers Roundtable thing.
Yeah.
I love both concepts, but the talk story thing was awesome with Rob. So I'm a huge fan of it.
That's really cool. And I wanted to see that. I sort of know the story. I've heard it from Rabbit's point of view, which is really fascinating because Rabbit's got a sort of, it's like herding cats. Now, you know, he's got 13 days of guys just basically tearing their hair out and going, this thing's lame. And
right.
You know, you can imagine the backstory behind that. And you know that Rabbit and Jack McCoy, and there was another guy, a Billabong exec that was involved in it.
Gordon.
Not Gordon Merchant.
Gordon was there though.
Oh, was he? There was another guy that was kind of, I think if you do an Encyclopedia of Surfing search for this, you'll find out who the other guy is. But anyway, you know, that backstory from those guys, the organizers who had to kind of keep these, I don't know if they were coddled pro surfers, but pro surfers who were sort of told nothing and then for 13 days got nothing. You can imagine that everybody's wits were a bit tested there.
Yeah, I agree. Those guys definitely wanted to be elsewhere in the world surfing perfect waves, I'm sure. You know, 2 weeks is a long time to spend.
And I don't know if this was the event, but there was some event, I don't know if it was this one, but there was some event where, and it might have been at Jay Bay, where it was just flat. It was the last day of the waiting period, and Rabbit paddled out and more or less just willed the swell to show up.
Really?
He just sat there and goes, I'm going out there and I'm going to catch a wave and we're going to have this event, you know, and as the contest director, and I could be butchering this. I think I have three or four stories mixed up here. But the point is that Rabbit had this ability to just like will this swell. And sure enough, the tide dropped and the swell showed up and Rabbit caught a couple of waves. And before you know it, it was on and they were running heats. And
That's rad. Yeah. Well, I had another thought as I was watching that is like back when I was, when that happened in the mid 90s and I was getting into surfing, I was a teenager. There was fewer surf celebrities to really pay attention to. You know, it's like, we're going to send 8 people to West Oz. You're like, well, I could think of 5. Like, who are they going to round out the other 3 with, you know?
Yeah.
And I went to, I'm going to tie this all together. You're not going to see the direction I'm going, but I went to Graceland last year to Elvis Presley's,
I remember,
house.
Yeah.
And it dawned on me there, like, I know Elvis is...
I got the keychain still, by the way. Thank you. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. So Elvis, I knew that he was famous, but I never listened to his music when I was growing up or anything like that. He wasn't a big part of my life, but I knew he was famous. Well, when I went there, it dawned on me something I hadn't realized, which is in his era, there wasn't very many famous people. There was him, there was Frank Sinatra, you know, and maybe like 3 others, like legitimately A-list celebs. Whereas now there's people who make tens and tens of millions of dollars that you and I have no clue who they are. They're famous rappers, they're famous actors and actresses, they're YouTube celebrities. It's like, it's not like there's Justin Bieber and Beyonce.
Yeah.
There's them, but then there's also Taylor Swift and there's Katy Perry and there's Rihanna and there's just like all these people. Back then there wasn't really
Are you saying like 1950?
Yeah, whenever, dude.
I think there was a lot of people in 1950 that you're missing that were A-listers.
Okay. I made an exaggeration by saying there's 3, but there's now
there's way more now. Right?
Now there's people who you and I don't know. There's far more people that you and I don't know than we probably do that are like super famous. You know what I mean? And I kind of relate that to
how famous are they if we don't know them?
Enough to be making tens of millions, enough to not be able to walk through. No, but they can't walk through the Heathrow Airport probably without getting mobbed.
Okay.
But you and I don't know who they are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my point is that that's the way surfing is nowadays too. Like with this Billabong Challenge thing, I couldn't think of 8 surfers that they would want to send. Now I could think of 30. And then you could think of 30 that I don't know of, and I can name 10 that you don't know of. And we're like, who the heck cares about Creed McTaggart? All of Australia does, you know, and all of other places. But in Southern California, I don't really know that anybody cares about him, you know. And like we've talked about Luke Davis, and you're like, does he sell in board shorts? I don't know. That's always a conversation. And then,
by the way, Jay Davies was almost on my list.
Oh,
he almost made my list, but
he would be on mine for sure.
Now he can't be.
So, but then, I mean, then that, like, there's so many examples of that. Carlos Munoz, Jay Davies, Craig Anderson, like
Dion
Agius.
That's why every time you go,
like,
this guy rips, I go, yeah, they all rip.
Right.
But, like, who's got the competitive chops, who's got the Adriano de Souza to like make it happen.
Yeah.
That's the thing about Adriano, is that he actually doesn't rip that great. But he's so, but I mean, you know, that, and again, that's opinion, subjective opinion based on, yeah, you know, what I think is a good style or whatever. But, you know, that's what's so neat about Adriano, right? Is, but yeah, there's just so many guys that rip. Like, where's Matt Banning? You know, you told me at this time next year he was going to win the surfer pole. You had him, you know what I mean?
Like, I didn't say that.
I know, but I'm exaggerating.
By the way, he got injured at J-Bay before the event.
And that happens.
That's why he's not there.
Yeah, and that happens. Okay. You know, like, but do you miss him?
Yes, I do.
No, you're in love with
Matt.
Dude,
when I go to sleep.
You love Matt Banning.
I do. When I go to sleep at night, that's the last thing I think about. Praying for Matt Banning's knee to recover.
Matt Banning.
So that I
poster.
Can see him again. Yeah. Well, I put it on my ceiling so I can
but
just look
so,
up.
So you're right. There are so many great surfers.
Yeah.
They all rip. There's guys in your hometown and my hometown that are red hot that you're like,
I know.
Who's the next guy? Kanoa Igarashi?
Yeah, he is.
Is actually. Jake Marshall going to be the guy?
Maybe next year. But I don't even, I'm not even complaining about this. It's not like,
no,
I'm
I know.
It's just like, I'm just making note of it because I watched the Billabong thing and I was like, yeah, when I was a kid, I had three guys that I loved, you know, and that was it.
Well, here, the Billabong thing, just as you know, I'm not, you know this, but back then it was like, okay, who's the Billabong riders? The entire Billabong team's going.
Right.
And then who are the other three guys that we have to have?
Kelly.
Well, Kelly, Rob, and Johnny Boy.
Yeah.
And that's who's going, you know, and then like Brendan Margeson, like Brendan, he's a good surfer, but
he was kind of the Dane of that time.
He was pretty, he's a pretty rad surfer,
he's
but he's
so good.
Pretty pedestrian. I mean, he's actually more like Taylor Knox, like a big power hacker guy.
But I mean, Dane in that he's creative and like whimsical and like you want to just.
You know more about Brendo than I do. I had no idea that he was creative and whimsical.
Yeah, like he's going to be spontaneous and radical. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But he definitely had the power carve for sure.
Yeah.
So anyways, watch that. I'll post a link to it, surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can watch the video of that talk story thing. Forgot to mention with John when we were talking about him earlier. View from the Blue Moon premieres tomorrow night in Newport Beach. I'm going to it. I
Good
got tickets on my way here. I just
Is
got
it
the
sold
text.
Out?
It was sold out last week, and then
wow.
I reached out and got
That's
the inside
cool.
track. And so I'm going to go check that out tomorrow.
Is John going to be there? Are they flying him in to hang out?
I think he probably would be. He's been doing all the local news circuit. Like he did KTLA. He was on the news. He was on French GQ. He did KCRW's guest DJ project. I love KCRW. Like it's a Los Angeles-based music station. But they do this guest DJ project.
Isn't it public radio? Isn't it NPR's affiliate or something?
Yeah, it is. And Kelly Slater's been on the guest DJ project in the past. They basically have a celebrity or quasi-celebrity in this case come in and give them five songs and discuss why these are their five favorite songs of the moment. And John is on it. I think it was like last week or something. Do you have any guesses as to what John's favorite songs are?
JJ Cale.
Oh, did you see this article?
Is it really?
No.
No, I have no clue. I'm sure it's
you're going to love number
it's a
one.
A bunch of guys that I don't even know.
No, you're going to love it, actually.
29 Pilots.
No.
21 Pilots.
Neil Young's Old Man.
Rad.
AC/DC's Thunderstruck.
Killer.
The Rolling Stones' Paint It Black.
Wow.
Black Sabbath's Under the Sun. And then Jack Johnson wrote a song for this new movie of his, View from the Blue Moon, and it's Seasick Dream. So
that's pretty cool.
Those
are the five songs that he spun on the radio based on those are his favorite.
Yep.
Wow.
And I will post a link or embed this episode.
Old Man by Neil Young.
The Hawaii native made history as the youngest competitor to surf the Triple Crown of surfing at age 13. And he's still going strong. His new surf film, View from a Blue Moon, documents his travels over 3 years.
There you go. There's just a little taster. KCRW's guest DJ project with John.
Cool, man.
Yeah. So I'm excited. I'll let you know how that film is. I'm super psyched for it. John C. Reilly, like I said, narrates it.
Neil Young rented a farmhouse, and the old man that lived on the farm that rented it to him, that's who he wrote Old Man about.
I had no clue.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. I heard that Neil Young was a lot like him. He was taking a look at his life.
Yes, thank you. I was just going to go there. He took a look at his life and he said, you know, we wear the same overalls.
I'm a lot like you were. It's 24 and there's so much more, you know? And
yeah.
All right. I'm enough of that. do you have must-see moment or Duke and Kook or any of that?
You know what? I apologize. I don't.
And don't
worry. One of the listeners sent an email to me that said, it's so lame that you don't have Duke and Kook for every episode. David's right. You should be more prepared, more professional. But, dude, I prepared an entire Surfer Pole Awards. And so, and I, on my drive down here, I was going, gosh, I got to come up with a Kook and a Duke. And it's easy to come up with a Duke. I mean, you can kind of mail in a Duke. And I just don't want to call people out for being a kook because
you say that, but I do it successfully every time.
I know, but I just feel like it without giving, like, it has to be like something that everyone would go, yeah, that guy's a kook for sure. You know, like even the guy that's doing it would be, yeah, I kind of kooked out. And I don't want to just grasp at straws for the sake of like being mean spirited, you know, like that's not in my makeup.
That's not what I'm doing, though.
I know you're not. I'm just saying.
So you need to think outside the box. That's not the point of the kook. Isn't to make hurt somebody's feelings. It's to illustrate something that is counter our ideals, and you know.
Okay.
So
no, you're right.
You're
Thanks
not trying hard enough.
Me.
That's the here's the
I
problem.
I think you're right. I have the wrong prism that I'm looking through.
You are like here's the real deal is you didn't take the time.
No, I
to
did.
Come up.
I thought
on
I,
the drive down here when you don't have the access of the internet at your fingertips. You got
to
sit down in front
of
a computer.
You have to have access to the internet.
Yes,
there are so many kooks on the internet. It's unbelievable.
Well, I come across an article over the course of the two weeks before we record this show, and I go, "Oh, that's weird, and that's a perfect kook move." Boom.
Okay, well, I got
to hear mine right now.
Yes, I'll
here,
shut up.
I'm going to illustrate to you.
How to do this.
Okay.
Considering I made up this segment like years ago before I even knew you. I used to tell you how to do this. Now you're telling me how to do this.
Hey,
do you remember when I used to say, you can't do that?
Grasshopper has become the master.
Oh, my God. You snatched the pebble right from my hand.
While you were staring at it, too. Your eyes were open and just snatched it.
I'm a blind man
okay.
with a pebble.
Here's the kook move.
Yes.
Got this tweet from @ Romans Ray at the end of October, so a couple weeks behind with this, but did you hear that Jay Bay may not be on the tour for 2016?
I can't say that I heard that.
Okay, check this out. The surfers were all in France, and they were doing some vote. I guess they vote regularly on various things. And
oh, I did hear this. Go ahead.
And there was two surfers who were getting the kook move that voted to kick Jay Bay off tour next year, given the shark attack situation with Mick. They're like, we don't feel safe enough out there, blah, blah, blah. So even Mick Fanning and Julian Wilson themselves were keen for another round at the world's most perfect right point break.
Let me guess, it was Goofy Foot.
Yeah, Goofy Foot Brazilians who didn't want to come back next year.
Name them.
Gabriel Medina and Jadson Andre.
Wow.
Raised their hands, not only raised their hands to vote it down and off the tour, vocally advocated for why it's not a good stop on tour. So that doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It just means, the reality is it probably will be back next year because it was the most highly publicized surf event ever in the history of the world. The YouTube clip of Mick getting attacked has 23 million views.
Oh,
everybody's going to be watching next year.
It's the best story. In fact, that shark should have been on my top 10. That was the most interesting thing ever.
So that should be your kook, actually. See how we did that? The shark was your kook of the week.
Right.
So
Look, you bring up a great point. The two kooks here, like that's a kook move.
Thank you.
A kook move. To not have Jay Bay be on tour, like how could you not want Jay Bay?
As a professional surfer, as a world champion.
A professional surfer.
Yeah.
And you're saying no to Jay Bay.
And this article is implying that they were using the shark incident as reason for why we don't want to go back there. But what we all really know is this is not an event that benefits their style of surfing.
Exactly.
They're trying to kick Jay Bay off the tour and replace it with
a beach break in
another
Brazil.
Rio, you know, or something.
Or Chicama, some perfect left or something.
Yeah.
Look, interestingly, from a competitive standpoint, I get it. I'm almost more disappointed that they're trying to cover it up. Like, I'd have more respect for them if they just said, hey, I could do way better at Chicama than I could do at Jay Bay.
Right.
Like all you got to do is look at my results.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't want it on tour. Call it what it is, but I do way better at the left.
Yeah.
And I'd have more respect for that, I think. But the idea that, oh, it's the shark, that's why we don't want it.
Yeah.
That's silly.
I agree. And by the way, there's sharks a lot of other places that they surf. And Jordy even said, when we were surfing the box, I was sitting with Miguel in the water and a shark came up. Oh, sorry. A shark came up between Miguel and I thrashing in the water. They didn't call off the event. Like, yeah. We stayed out there and we surfed. Yeah. And they didn't even publicize it, you know? So.
Oh, they should have.
But I don't know. Maybe they didn't catch it on camera. Maybe it wasn't, like, in the middle of the heat or something. But he's like, look, this is what we deal with. It is what it is, dude. This isn't the first time it's happened. It's the first time somebody got attacked, essentially. Yeah. But.
Wow.
Yeah, so. Big time kook move. No question about it.
Gabriel, do you have to get attacked with a jersey on for it to not be allowed, for it not to be a contest arena?
Let me address the rule book.
Because I think every surf spot there's been a shark attack.
Yeah.
You know?
But anyway, kook move. Gabe and Adriano calling you out.
Wow, Gabe, wearing your black hat. Soon enough, you will love to hate him. Got to have somebody that you just don't want to see do well.
Yeah. All right. Well,
no,
we'll see.
You love them all.
No, I don't love him and I don't hate him, but hating him that much.
Not like, hate, but like the guy that you root against because of
I'm not a
his
fan.
Lack of class, his overclaims.
I guess here's my thought on his, Gabriel.
His shower commercial where he shaves his underarms.
Gillette. So
he's a good guy, but whatever.
No, but I don't know that he is. So everything that you said, I don't actually like about him. His persona, the bravado, but I like watching him surf. You know, it's like when he's in a heat, I'm going to watch it. And it's not that I like his style or something like that. It's just
He's dynamic.
Or no, he's just such a tenacious competitor.
Yes.
And he is dynamic. And it's kind of like.
He's good for the tour.
I want to see somebody go out there and like trounce him.
Yes.
But they're going to have to get two nines.
And that's good.
Yeah.
Yes. See, look, you're coming around. We want to see him get trounced.
Yeah. But I.
Look, every sporting event. Last night, I wanted to see the Chicago Bears get trounced.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to see Jay Cutler get his butt kicked.
Yeah.
You know? Doesn't mean that Jay's not a good guy or that I wouldn't like having a beer with Jay or whatever. And, right. You know.
Well, okay. My Duke of the week.
Okay.
Mick Fanning for granting the wish to the Grom who has brain cancer that wants to surf with Mick. Okay? Here's the deal with Mick, dude. He was never my favorite surfer. He slowly crawled his way into my heart and he snuggled up in there and taking a nap and without me knowing he's found a place in my heart over the course of the last 4 or 5 years where I'm like, dude, this guy surfs unbelievably good in all conditions.
I think from he's pipe suckling on cloud your teeth.
Totally. Without me knowing, I was like, why does this feel so good to have Mick here with me? And so
now, am I jaded? Because when I saw this story, maybe I'm jaded, and I hope I'm wrong here. But I kind of sense like, is this like a PR move? Like, aren't there lots of surfers that do lots of wonderful things for cancer-stricken kids and all these autistic kids? And like, there's so many.
Yeah.
Is this?
Let me.
I hope I'm being jaded because I want to love Mick for this.
Let me ask you this.
Is this
Scott
a PR move?
Let me ask you this,
no,
Scott.
I don't know. I'm not saying it is.
So let me answer your question.
Okay. Thank you. Let me love Mick with you.
He's number one in the world right now going into the world title race.
Yes.
Taking time out to do this.
I'm not,
so would.
Right, but
would,
the publicity
no,
of it is
stop,
where I'm.
Stop. Okay. All right. You can get publicity in a lot of different ways. Do you do it when you're in the home stretch of the season? Take time out of your life to go do something like this. I don't see Gabriel Medina doing that stuff. You're right. Other people do it for publicity. Guys who are 20th spot on the rankings that have nothing else to do with their time right now. Mick needs to keep his eye on the prize, but he still takes the time out to do this. He's works with a Starlight Foundation. This kid's parents, the kid's fighting cancer. He wanted to surf with Mick. Mick took the time out of his life to do it. The kid said, quote, it was the best moment of my life. Mick,
you've sold me.
So Mick,
I believe you. It's sincere.
But this is just one thing. Remember last year he was my Duke because local Newport Beach Grom, 13-year-old Tyler Gunther, was surfing Pipeline on a big day.
Right, that was really cool.
He lost his board.
Yes.
And he was out there, and there's these big wash-through sets.
Yes.
Mick took off his leash, gave Tyler his board to paddle in on, and then Mick swam in at Pipeline with no fins.
Yeah.
That's a hero move, you know?
I agree.
And then the shark attack thing.
Yes.
Then he's got 3 world titles. He's the hardest working man in surf business.
And he's suckling your teeth right now. Yeah.
Dude,
no, I agree with you.
Don't tease me with a good time, man. That is like out of my dreams.
What else has he done? Is he the best man at your wedding?
I wish. Those things, he's crawled his way into my heart. But as a surfer, I also didn't love his surfing before.
Yes.
I can't deny how amazing his surfing is.
Yes.
And in all waves, from lowers to Pipeline.
Yeah.
He's gnarly.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I love Mick,
I'm a fan. I just was I didn't read the story. I just saw the headline and I thought, maybe, and you know what? It's on me. It's not on Mick. It's me for like even going there.
And
I'm glad that he's doing these things.
And also, I don't think that he's the one publicizing this. Like, he just took an afternoon out, went and did it,
that's
and then
the
other
key.
People publicize right. it.
And unless even if his PR firm does push it out there, look, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, like, he, at the end of the day, you're right. It's clear to you that it's a sincere effort to help this young man, with
yeah.
or without PR. And so, good.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah. This kid couldn't wait until after December to have this wish granted.
Yeah.
Had to happen now.
I'm glad for the young man. Yeah.
So, and then must-see moment. Mason Ho's latest video that just dropped.
That was cool. That
Mason,
was so cool.
Mason's wedge surfing. It's called...
I've seen that before, though. That seems like I saw that footage somewhere, or he's surfed that same weird Rio wedge peak before somewhere. I've seen that, but...
He posted a couple clips on
ago.
It. Oh, that long ago?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, Mason surfing this super wedgy head high. The thing starts off as like an ankle high side wave bouncing off the rocks. He'll catch it and then go into this backdoor peak. He'll go left. He'll go right. He'll bounce off it. He'll get shacked. He'll do a big air.
Yeah, it's really
like
cool.
So freaking rad.
It's a unique wave, a unique surfer, and unique surfing. All three things happening at once. It's
totally.
A radical wedge.
Can't imagine anybody surfing it better than he does either.
Yeah, it's pretty
like
neat.
Like Kelly couldn't do it better. You know?
Wait a minute.
Could not.
Wait a minute.
Don't try to act like you have a love for Kelly the way that I have a love for Mick.
Stop the recording.
Let's actually do a love fest.
No.
We'll both profess. Me for Mick, you for Kelly. We'll go.
Man crush?
Full on.
What else do you got?
We have to record it on a Monday, though. Man crush Monday.
We'll
do a special episode. Julian's dreamy eyes.
TT Thursday or TT Tuesday?
So, anyways. That's my must-see moment. Mason Ho, I'll have it on surfsplendorpodcast.com, where you can also contact, leave a message on the website, whatevs.
Or you can watch it on...
What?
Downlineradio.com.
There you go. I was just going to see if you actually know your own website.
I'm actually I'm relaunching boardroomshow.com, and I'm going to include all the downline stuff on that site.
Sweet. Extra downloads, dude. Love it.
I'm just moving it over there.
Oh.
Hopefully, okay. I'll get... all the back-end BS figured out, too, so we can... Because I'm quite confident that we're getting a lot of listeners.
We are.
I just don't know how to...
I'm tracking it on my end, buddy. Bang, Mason.
Whatever you're getting, we can multiply times three, I think.
Three.
Yeah.
Love it.
I think that's fair.
If we can multiply it
by the way,
three, I'd be happy.
10-year anniversary?
Of?
The show.
When is it?
Today, right?
Is it today, literally?
Didn't you say it was in November?
Oh, shoot. I think you're right.
It might be today.
Dude, we are the worst at celebrating.
We just don't self, you know, promote. It's all like we're, you know, it is what it is. If you like it, you'll listen. If not, you're not. You don't need to know it's a 10-year anniversary of the best and only surf podcast available to mankind.
The most
that was
widely downloaded best. Yeah.
Well, for sure the most downloaded just based on its... lengthy history, 10 years.
No, I know. Well, like, I literally have the numbers, and it is.
Oh.
So.
Well, I mean, you've got Surf Splendors, but I mean,
but no,
over the years,
yeah.
We don't have the numbers on, like, when it was on terrestrial radio. It would get downloaded off of that radio station's
pod
directory or whatever.
Right. Well, congratulations, 10 years. Let's, I always say, like, we'll figure out a celebration, and then I never follow up with it, but...
Well,
maybe.
To continue the love fest, I can't do it without you. You do, and in all sincerity, you do a great job. And
thank
quite
you.
Frankly, I doubt that I would be here if we didn't hook up.
Well, you were here for 8 years without me, so
yeah.
There's something to be said for that. All right, man.
I love you too, man.
Thanks, man.
What else do we got? Anything else?
No, that was must see moments and kooks and dudes.
All right.
Done deal.
Until next time, which will be 2 weeks from today, I guess.
Maybe next week.
Maybe next week. Let's keep those listeners teased. Yeah. Adios and...
Trying to make up for lost time.
Adios and aloha.
All right. Everything that I said at the beginning of the show, just repeat right here. Follow us on social media at Surf Splendor. The website is surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can leave a comment about today's show. You can find an archive of all past episodes. You can find all the music, including this Pearl Jam track from what I believe was their second album, Versus. But everything is on SurfSplendorPodcast.com. And then rate and review the show on iTunes, wherever you listen. That helps the show to grow. Share the show with friends. And I think that's all that I have to say. Otherwise, thanks for listening. This is your host, David Scales, reminding you, as always, to shred on.